Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to begin the 25th chapter of Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam, The Glories of Devotional Service. Going back to the early part of the third canto, a very wonderful scene begins the early part of third canto. It's Vidura, who's been on long pilgrimage, 34-year pilgrimage to holy places, to purify himself so that he's fit to be in Krishna's company again after his, what he felt was contaminating association in Hastinapur. When he left, it was for purification. So he just happened to be in a forest of Vrindavan and happened to find Uddhava. Just after Krishna had finished speaking Uddhava Gita. Just after, same day, Krishna left the world. And here comes Vidura. And Krishna even told Vidura and told Maitreya, who also heard the conversation between Krishna and Uddhava, Vidura is going to be coming very soon. And Maitreya, I want you to instruct Vidura, my dear devotee Vidura, in all that I've just explained to Uddhava and you've heard. He gave him some service so that he could sustain his life after Krishna left. And he gave Uddhava some service too, to take the message and on his behalf deliver the message, because Krishna said to Uddhava, I came into this world to give association to my devotees. And one of those sets of devotees is the devotees of Naranarayan Rishi. I didn't get to go there. But you go there. You have some service to do to sustain your life after I'm gone. And Krishna left. And in that condition, Uddhava was smashed. His life and soul has departed this world. What his feelings were, or out of this world. Not ordinary feelings. Not just sadness. Transcendental emotion. And Vidura came. And he said things that people say when they see somebody they haven't seen in a long time. Uddhava! You're here, you are in the forest of Vrindavan. And when you see Uddhava, you think of Krishna. So he started asking, how is Krishna and Balaram and all the residents of Dwarka? And he named them by name, and he went on and on and on. How is this one? How is that one? How are they doing? And when he finished, Uddhava was absorbed in trance of thought of Krishna, just hearing Krishna's name. Shukadeva Goswami describes, he was in a state of trance. He had he wanted to serve Vidura. So, but it was, he couldn't because his external consciousness was gone. But he wanted to. So he, with great effort, he brought his consciousness to the external state just so he could serve Vidura. And started talking about Krishna for a couple of chapters, three chapters, two and a half chapters. And it went through the whole night till the next morning, and the dawn came. And he said, I have to go now because Krishna gave me some service. But if you have some further question, you should go to Maitreya, because Krishna wanted you to go to Maitreya. And besides, Maitreya is elder to me. He's my superior. Uddhava was his superior. Maitreya was a brahmana. But he, prior to hearing the Uddhava Gita, he was a muni, a great scholar, and a mystic, but not Shuddha Bhakta. But he became a Shuddha Bhakta. He became an Uttama Adhikari Shuddha Bhakta just by hearing. And Uddhava got up and left. And Maitreya was then in this ecstatic and sad emotional state at the same time, ecstatic. Krishna thought of me before he left. How fortunate. The Supreme Lord mentioned my name. And he gave me an opportunity to hear what I wasn't present to hear by giving that service to Maitreya. How fortunate. But very sad because Krishna had left. So in that transcendental emotional state, he went in the direction that Uddhava had sent him, where Maitreya had gone. And he found Maitreya. So from the beginning of the third canto, early portion of the third canto, there's this lengthy discussion between Vidura and Maitreya, which is referred to in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, when just in one verse it says Vidura had gone on pilgrimage, met Maitreya, and heard from him to his full satisfaction before he went back to Hastinapur to deliver Dhritarashtra. And then, having heard that in the first canto, Shonaka says, can you go back to the first canto subject matter and describe in more detail what were the subject matters discussed between Maitreya and Vidura? Because it must have been really good. They didn't have video equipment. They just had good memories. And how did Sutta know it? He heard it from Shukadeva Goswami. How did Shukadeva Goswami know it? He heard it from Vyasadeva. How did Vyasadeva know it? He and Maitreya were friends. Could you imagine being a friend with an incarnation of the Personality of Godhead? How elevated was Maitreya? So in this way, the scene that opens the beginning of chapter 25 is continuation of the talks between Maitreya and Vidura, which are being told by Sutta Goswami to the sages of Naimisharanya. So the first verse is the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka, is asking more about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, specifically what they talked about in relation to Kapiladeva. Because the previous chapter, 24, was Kapiladeva, Kardama Muni, left. You saw the picture. He's circumambulated Kapiladeva, and he went back to the forest to set an example of what one who is not attached to this world, but sets an example for the rest of the world, does. That's the opening scene. Chapter 25, verse 1. Shaunaka is speaking. And he says, so the first three verses are glorification of the Lord, specifically glorification of Kapiladeva, and glorification of the process of hearing about the Supreme Lord, Krishna Katha. That's the subject matter. And here's how it's presented. Sri Shaunaka said, although he is unborn, the Supreme Personality of Godhead took birth as Kapila Muni by his internal potency, Atmamaya. He descended to disseminate transcendental knowledge for the benefit of the whole human race. So, how does the Lord descend? By his own potency. And what is his purpose? Specific, if you remember from the morning session, in this particular category of Avesh Avatar, or Shakti Avesh Avatar, Prabhav Shakti Avesh Avatar, in which Kapila Dev appears, he delivers teachings. Distinct from Mohini Murti, she didn't so much establish teachings, she established the protection of the demigods and so forth, and some other things. But Kapila Dev is going to give teaching. So the Sanskrit phrase that Prabhupada begins the purport is Atma Pragyaptaye. Atma Pragyaptaye means to disseminate transcendental knowledge. So that's his purpose. Yada yadahi dharma shaklani bhavati bharata. The specific is dharma sangstha panartha, establishing the principles of, in that age of Satya Yuga, the means is meditation. And meditation on what? Meditation on the absolute truth. What's the absolute truth? He establishes that from which everything comes. It's Vedanta. So he's giving the root of all existence through his Sankhya teachings. Why? To deliver people. To deliver people from what? From their material existence. When you're delivered from material existence, what do you do? That's also described. Devotional service. Where do you do it? Wherever you are, you do it. Whether it's this place, that place, Vaikuntha, hell, heaven, wherever you are, you do devotional service. That's the essence of the soul in the liberated position, the perfected condition. He came to give that knowledge. Very nice message in the purport. This is framing the whole subject. It's like essence messages. So Prabhupada explains in the whole of the Vedic literature, the Vedas, the Vedic knowledge offers a program for, one, good living conditions, and second, gradual elevation to the mode of goodness. That's called Karmakanda. Vast portion of the Vedas is that. Sufficient necessities, elevation gradually to the mode of goodness. What's the purpose of all that? Some people say, there isn't any purpose beyond that. Enjoy. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, most people think that's all there is. What's the purpose of the Vedas? Live piously. From the fruit of the piety, you get pious results. You get merit, kriti, and with that kriti comes wealth, good education, beauty, nice birth. And in a pious way, not the other kind, in a pious way, you enjoy prosperity in this life. And after this life, an upgrade. You go to the heavenly region. And there's nothing more than that. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, some people say, most people say, that's all there is. And there's nothing more. But in the purport, Prabhupada is making it clear, yes, the Vedas does provide, he calls it a program. But what's the purpose? He then writes, in the mode of goodness, one's knowledge expands. Period. That's the purpose of the mode of goodness, not piety, enjoy the fruits of piety, and prosper. Enjoy piously. That's not the purpose. In the mode of goodness, it's an opportunity for expanding knowledge. Then, on the platform of passion, there is no knowledge. For passion is simply an impetus to enjoy material benefits. So, goodness mixed with a good hefty dose of passion is the heavenly region. On the platform of ignorance, there's no knowledge and no enjoyment. Simply life almost like that of the animals. So that's not what the Vedas are recommending, either of those, passion or ignorance, but expanding of knowledge. Next paragraph. The Vedas are meant to elevate one from the mode of ignorance to the platform of goodness. When one is situated in the mode of goodness, he is able to understand knowledge of the self. What's matter and what's spirit? And I belong to the side of spirit. Second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, or Sankhya philosophy, presented by Kapila Dev. Whether it's presented by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita or Kapila Dev in the Bhagavatam, it's the mode of goodness is for that purpose, expanding knowledge, specifically knowledge of the self. And Prabhupada goes down again. The ordinary man can't appreciate it. How am I going to get some enjoyment from this? That's all I want to know. And if I can't get any enjoyment from this, I'm not interested. And they'll say, I'm not interested. Or they'll say, I don't have time. Why? I'm too busy. Doing what? Chasing after the carrot. Getting things so I can enjoy. I don't have time. And it's true, they don't have time. The way the material energy has them engaged. Prabhupada writes about it in Bhagavad Gita. This is the time element. There's no time. The external energy works in such a way, they're so busy when they say they don't have any time, they don't have any time. But what happens when they say, no, I want? The time energy starts to work differently. And there's time. It's mystical. We have time. Just a question of how we use it. And how the modes of nature act upon us. So the Vedas is to elevate one through detachment, through charity, and as we heard yesterday evening, Krishna describing, better than knowledge is acting with detachment. It expands knowledge up to the platform of the soul. And then you can act on the platform of the soul and have some inkling of the Supreme Soul and act in relation to the Supreme Soul. Follow the regulations of bhakti, be engaged, and develop a desire to attain to him instead of just saying, I don't have time because of fruitive work. Then Prabhupada, this is an introductory, framing the topic kind of verse. Then there's, okay, those that have some knowledge of the soul. Then his statement is, simply to understand that one is not matter but spirit, soul, aham brahmasmi, quote, I am by nature Brahman, is not sufficient knowledge for understanding even the self. What to speak of the activities of the self. One must be situated in the activities of Brahman. And knowledge of those activities is explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. It's one of the chapters. We saw the chapters outlined. What does one do in the realm of devotional service. I've shared this in the past before. I'll share it again. When I was a nice Christian boy growing up in America, and I heard about heaven and the kingdom of God, I asked, what's it like there? What do people do? And much to my disappointment, two things. Nobody knew. And even worse was humiliation. It was a pat on the head and embarrassment. You know, stand up and pull the string and say, go ahead, say it. My mother would do like that. I was very embarrassed. Go ahead, say it. Then she would, and I was just so embarrassed that she said it. He wants to know what it's like in heaven. Isn't that nice? But no answer. What's it like? What do you do there? So I stopped asking. I was too embarrassed. I mean, at least externally I stopped asking. But why would you want to go there if you don't know what it's like? And if you know what it's like, there's maybe a good reason to go there. It's like a, you know, travel advertisement. When part of my service at one point in time was distributing books in Puerto Rico, because at one time the Puerto Rico airport became legal. So I was one of the airport distributors, and I don't know why, but I was given the assignment with, along with Gajahanta Prabhu, to go to Puerto Rico and start book distribution in Puerto Rico. So when you're leaving New York, the airport has these nice advertisements of go to Puerto Rico, palm trees and beautiful beaches, and go and enjoy in Puerto Rico. When you get in Puerto Rico, they have all the billboards saying, go to New York. Enjoy in New York. The thing is, it never happens. The enjoyment that's supposed to happen never happens. That's why you want to go to some other place to enjoy. So like a travel advertisement, go to the kingdom of God. What's it like? What do you do there? So Prabhupada's statement is, knowledge of those activities is explained by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's, you know, that's an announcement of what's going to come up in Kapila Dev's instructions. Such transcendental knowledge can be appreciated in human society, but not in animal society, as clearly indicated here by the word nrinam, or for human beings. So this is meant for human beings, and human beings are regulated. And those that, with two legs and two hands that aren't regulated, they're not human beings. So another way of saying the same, Prabhupada would speak, human form of life begins when one accepts the regulation of varna and ashram. And that's just the beginning, and it's meant to elevate one by performance of prescribed duty in a religious manner to come to the mode of goodness, and the mode of goodness expand knowledge to understand the self that's beyond the body, and gradually, by acting in relation to the self, the spiritual identity, giving up the fruits of one's work to some good cause, and gradually coming to understand the Supreme and hearing about the activities that exist in the spiritual world and wanting to go there and regulating one's life according to the regulations of bhakti and desiring to go to the kingdom of God. And if that becomes your desire, that's where you go. The problem is we have mixed desire. We want the kingdom of God without God. We want that enjoyment without the consciousness. Well, who's the enjoyer? We want a piece of the pie. We want to be the enjoyer instead of offering it all to Krishna. So that's the first verse. I'm going to go through the this morning's class is what Shonuka and Sutta Goswami exchange and the beginning of Devahuti's presenting herself before Kapila Dev. So, second verse of chapter 25, Shonaka continued, "There is no one who knows more than the Lord Himself. No one is more worshipable or more mature, a yogi, than He. He is therefore the master of the Vedas, and to hear about Him is always the actual pleasure of the senses." So this is glorification of the hearing process, Krishna Katha. He's the best, and hearing about Him is the best. So I want to hear about Him, Shonaka says. Tell us about Kapila Dev. He's representing this whole huge assembly of sages. Because it's the best. And it's bhavanti ritkarna rasayana kata. It's very, very pleasing to the ear and to the heart. And it elevates one to that spiritual realm. Go, Suta Goswami, go. Tell us about Lord Kapila Dev. In the purport, Prabhupada explains, no one can surpass the personality of Godhead. The verse here says, Nahi yasya varshmana pungsam. There isn't anyone that can surpass the Supreme Lord. We've heard so many times the phrase that Prabhupada would use to describe a name of the personality of Godhead is Asamordva. And in the verse books that I've seen, there's no understanding where that comes from, but Prabhupada would say it over and over again. The Lord is called Asamordva. Sama means equal. Asama, He has no equal. And Urdva, greater. There's no one greater than Him, there's no equal to Him. He's in the mathematical terminology, He is a set with only one of its kind. There's no competitor. There's no equal. There's no one greater. That person I want to hear about, Shonaka says. And one of his forms is Lord Kapila. Because the previous verse, he's appeared. Kardamuni has left. He's now with Devahuti. Please describe. And in the verse, the first class yogi is given two definitions. One is the Lord Himself, Yogeshwara. He's the master of all yogis and all mystic powers of the yogis. They derive their ability from Him, whatever they have. And another is one who associates with Yogeshwara or the Supreme Lord. He becomes of the same quality. And sometimes, because the Lord finds happiness in doing so, He has the devotee do something even he can't do. He can do it, but he's like he can't do it, and then he has his devotee do it. Because he likes his devotee so much. And such a person, the personality of Godhead, is worshipable by all yogis. Because Kapila Dev has mystic powers, and Kardamuni also has mystic powers. But between the two, although one is the father and the other is the son, Kapila Dev is the worshipable one. He's worshipable by all yogis. And just hearing, remember that description in chapter 32 about milk? As with milk, and it can be appreciated by different senses in different ways, but by hearing, then the mind can understand the whole picture of what is milk. So also, or similarly, by hearing about Kapila Dev, the senses, all the senses, not only the ear, but all the senses become most pleased. Why is that? Because by hearing, one becomes enlivened or awakened, illumined to transcendental knowledge. And in that transcendental knowledge position, one engages the senses in service to the master of the senses, and the senses are most pleased. So those are the three introductory verses to the chapter. Then Sutta responds and says, the most powerful sage, Maitreya, was a friend of Vyasadeva. Being encouraged and pleased by Vidura's inquiry about transcendental knowledge, Maitreya spoke as follows. And in the verse, two things. In the verse, Maitreya is given this address as Bhagavan. Maitreyo Bhagavangs Tata. And many times I've heard Prabhupada say the term Bhagavan is only appropriate to be used with the personality of Godhead as Bhagavan. He says, someone that's born blind, their parents may give him the name Padmalochan, beautiful-eyed. But that's the sentiment of the parents. Actually, he's blind. Similarly, someone may name their son Bhagavan, or call themselves Bhagavan. We won't go into different persons that have called themselves Bhagavan. But, or encourage their followers to call themselves Bhagavan. But it's appropriate for the personality of Godhead. But in the purport, he's saying, same as the previous, one who associates very intimately with Bhagavan as Maitreya is also addressed in that way because of his intimacy of relationship with Bhagavan, for that reason only. And the second point is that Vidura is similarly qualified. Vidura is very intimately associated with Krishna. Krishna loves Vidura. He loved Vidura so much that when he came to Hastinapur, he didn't even stay in Hastinapur, didn't stay in the royal palace. He stayed with Vidura. Because he loves Vidura. And Vidura's wife also. She loves Krishna very much, and Krishna loved her very much. It's just natural. So when two persons of such exalted character come together, like Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami, and so many other examples, Shaunaka Rishi and Suta Goswami, and it takes the proper speaker, the proper receiver, and when you have that combination, very elevated. So the sages of Naimisharanya, they're very eager to hear. So Suta responds, here's what Maitreya said. Being very enlivened by Vidura's question about transcendental knowledge, here's what he said. When Kardama Muni left for the forest, Lord Kapila stayed on the strand of the Bindu Sarovara to please his mother, Devahuti. Strand is a nice word. It's a poetic language term. It means on the shore, or the bank, by the side of Bindu Sarovar. And there's a number of Bindu Sarovars in India that all claim this is where Kapila stayed. This is where Kapila stayed. This is where Kapila stayed. One of them is in Bhuvaneshwar, Bindu Sarovar. Any of you been to Bindu Sarovar in Bhuvaneshwar? Nice place. So, there he is, Kapila Dev with his mother, Devahuti, and when Kapila Dev, who could show her the ultimate goal of the absolute truth, was sitting leisurely before her, Devahuti remembered the words of Brahma, who had spoken to her. What were the words of Brahma? the child that you're now pregnant with is a form of the personality of Godhead. So she knew. Kardamuni also confirmed, but Brahma confirmed. This person is the Supreme Person. And she therefore began to question Kapila as follows. Devahuti said, I am very sick of the disturbance caused by my material senses. For because of this sense disturbance, my Lord, I have fallen into the abyss of ignorance. Pretty strong. She's a pure devotee. But she's feeling this way. So what to speak of us who are not pure devotees? What are we going to feel like if we're little, you know, lights on? We're thinking about what's going on. Her dear husband, who she has served for so long, very faithfully and lovingly, and is a pure devotee, has left. She's naturally feeling great separation from her dear husband. And she's also realizing, aside from the spiritual portion of that feeling of separation, there's a material portion of her feeling of separation, like Kunti offers in her prayers. The Pandavas and Vrishnis, my sons and my father's family, of which I am part. I'm feeling affinity for both. Krishna, when you're here, my sons, the Pandavas, are very happy, but I know that the Vrishni family, they're feeling great pain. Now you're going back to Hastinapur, back to Dwarka, and the Vrishni family will feel very happy, but the Pandavas, my sons, will feel very unhappy. So if you're here, if you're there, I'm unhappy, and I'm unhappy, feeling their unhappiness. So please remove the material portion of my affinity for you, and let it just be a spiritual affinity. So she's, in a different language, saying the same thing. The specific Sanskrit word in the verse is asat indriya tarshanat. The Prabhupada explains, asat means impermanent, and sat means permanent. So there's asat indriya and sat indriya. There's material and there's spiritual senses. And tarshanat, she's saying, please remove, I'm disturbed by this asat indriya, attachment for the temporary attraction of an attachment to the objects of the senses. So please bring me to the permanent side. The permanent senses, Prabhupada writes, being contaminated by matter, are not acting properly. So this is a theme that's going to come in several verses, so you'll hear it expressed in different ways. It's simultaneously two things. Affirmation, or wishing to be situated in the spiritual application of life, and wishing to become detached from the material portion of life. The asat indriya, tarshanat. Tarshanat means agitation. I'm disturbed by my senses contemplating temporary things. So there are eternal sensory activities. Please situate me in that position. Text number 8. Your lordship is my only means of getting out of this darkest region of ignorance. She's strong language. I'm very sick of this disturbance. I want to get out of the darkest region of ignorance. She's such an elevated person. What to speak of us, darkest region of ignorance? Hey, she's up there. We're That's the darkest region of ignorance. What's us? Because you are my transcendental I, which by your mercy only I have attained after many, many births. So she's using some metaphors in this verse and coming verses. This one is, you are my eye. So, what are eyes meant for? To see. And see with transcendental knowledge. We can see with transcendental knowledge, even we're in the darkest region of ignorance, if there's an eye and illumination. Even if there's an eye, without illumination, you can't see. So please bring light into my existence. Prabhupada explains in the purport, this verse is very instructive since it indicates the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. And that's what the purport is about. The spiritual master is worshipped as one who delivers the disciple from the mire of ignorance with the light of the torch of knowledge. And we have our standard prayer for that one. Who knows that one? Om Ajnana Timarandasya Ananjana Salakaya Chakshuran Militam Jina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. That's a standard and classic prayer. And Devahuti is saying it in her own language. In the verse, a very important word Prabhupada says is this word Paragam, Paragam. Paragam means one who can take the disciple or take one to the other side. There's material existence and there's us. And there's the other side of material existence. And Paragam is one who can take one to the other side of material existence. So recognizing that that's the position of a spiritual master or the spiritual master, who can take one to the other side of material existence, that is, give light to this place of darkness. And how does that light come? He doesn't pick her up and carry her to the other side of material existence. He speaks. And by his speaking, she's carried to the other side of material existence. The light of transcendental knowledge illumines the position of darkness. Darkness is dispelled by light. Just by hearing. Not some mystical thing. Prabhupada described there was, in his childhood, there was one yogi who was on a stage and he was performing an initiation for his disciple. He touched his disciple's forehead and some transmission of electrical shock. And the guru fell to the ground unconscious. He like short-circuited or lost all of his shakti, and then the disciple fell to the ground. And then the spiritual master was on the ground crying. And the disciple asked, why are you crying? He said, because I've lost all of my energy. I gave it all to you. And Prabhupada said, where is that in the Vedas? The process of initiation is some discharge of electrical energy, and then he's empty after he discharges his electrical energy. Where is that in the Vedas? Where is that described anywhere? Some show to get some followers or whatever. Something imagined or pretended. So the means of elevation from the darkness, the darkest region of ignorance, similar to our standard prayer, the Sanskrit is tamasa andhasya. Same language. Om ajnana timarandhasya. Tamasa andhasya, the darkest region of ignorance. Then dushparasya, difficult, dushparasya, difficult to cross over. But one can cross over by that merciful agent, the paragam. One can take one to the other side, like a boatman. can take you from one side of the river to the other side of the river. Or the boat of transcendental knowledge can carry you across the ocean of material existence. Where do you get the boat of transcendental knowledge? From one who has one. From the spiritual master, or one who gives that knowledge. And that boat of transcendental knowledge is so wonderful, as soon as you step in the boat, you're on the other side. Because the water, the ocean, shrinks to the amount of water that's in the hoof print of a calf. Still some water there, but it's not an ocean. But it appears to be an ocean. If you don't have transcendental knowledge, how can I cross this ocean? Oh, me, oh, my. Whining and complaining about the circumstances of life. Just step in the boat of transcendental knowledge, and you're on the other side. And then there's all the yeah buts. But I'm struggling. Okay, step in the boat of transcendental knowledge. But my legs are short. I don't know if I can do it. You can do it. Step in the boat of transcendental knowledge. And go on with the hearing process until you have confidence in the subject matter that you're hearing. And that gives you self-confidence, because the subject matter of transcendental knowledge carries you beyond your own capacity. It's not about your capacity. It's about the transcendental knowledge. It has great potency. She's recognizing that in Lord Kapila. Prabhupada is taking that, not just Lord Kapila, but the position of the representative of the Supreme Lord, Lord Kapila, or his suitable representative. She says, "You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and Supreme Lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun." Another metaphor. The eye, and then disseminate the rays of the sun. But it's giving light, transcendental light. "In order to dissipate the darkness of ignorance of the whole universe." So, once again, the Supreme Lord is unique. Asamurdva. He's one of a kind. He has no equal. He has no one greater than him. There's suns, and then there's the source of the sun and all the light of the sun, and that's the Supreme Lord. And those that represent him can distribute that same light. They're given a license, distributor's license. Here, you distribute this light. You can, here's power of attorney, you can give me to whoever you like. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that can happen even with the Madhyama Adhikari. Krishna so wishes, please distribute me to whoever you like. So he's the, in that way, the addressed by Devahuti as the Lord of all living entities. Now, please, now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Same theme, same message. It's wishing the darkness, darkest region of ignorance to be gone, delusion to be gone, this sick of disturbance caused by my material senses, which include the mind, by the way. So it's wanting dismissal, not staying attached to the thing that's the cause of misery, wanting to be relieved of the cause of misery, but there's the other side, wishing to take shelter. It's the same theme. Anukalyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya varjanam. Or accepting things favorable for devotional service, rejecting things unfavorable for devotional service. What's the goal? Devotional service. Unmixed devotional service. So reject those things unfavorable, accept the things favorable. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequent bodily relations. So, you, Prabhupada writes at the end of this paragraph, Devahuti therefore said, he's paraphrasing, My engagement in sense gratification was also due to you, or facilitated by you. Now, kindly get me out from this engagement. Free me from this engagement. So these two components. A strong desire to reach the spiritual destination and an agent to get you there, paragam. And the strong desire to get you there has a subcomponent. Let go of the material asat indriya tarshanat. When you need an, she's recognizing, I can't. She knows. She has knowledge. She knows what's what. She can't do it on her own. I need your help. The help is in the form of instruction. Prabhupada speaks about that surrender in its purified state is without some expectation. And he gives as an example, worldly people who know the scripture may know that if you give in charity to a person that has less, you'll get back four times. Good investment. Whatever that math is. You give something, you invest something, you get back four times. 400% interest. Hey, that's a good investment. Let me make some investment over there. This is called Prakrita Bhakta. And I won't use this temple as an example because I'm sure that doesn't happen here. But I know that it happens in New York. We're having morning Bhagavatam class, and there's this one fellow in particular. He comes. It's as like we're not even there. We're not even there. Bhagavatam class is not happening. He comes right in the middle between the speaker and the audience, and he's got these plastic bags that have stuff he wants to put on the altar and starts rustling the plastic bags and puts this on the altar and that on the altar. We're not even there. And then pays his obeisances, gets up and says some prayers out loud right in the middle of Bhagavatam class, right? We're not even there. And he doesn't take bills, he takes coins, because there's this thing that you clank, the coins clank on a little metal piece, and clank, 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 clank. And then goes over and takes Charanamrita and, you know, makes a big thing. And then walks out, like we weren't even there. And you can practically hear the wheels turning. I'm giving and I'm going to get back. He's doing the math. And it, you know, something happened. He doesn't come around anymore. But he was doing that regularly. And even if you speak to him, like, you know, not during class, but afterwards, he can't hear it. It's like, he didn't hear it. We're not there. He just kept doing it. He just surrendered and said, okay, that's the nature of this person. There was one bhakta who then became initiated. I won't mention his name. But he disclosed, my favorite part of Bhagavad Gita is when Krishna says, even if you don't complete the process of devotional service, after this life you'll go to the heavenly planets and enjoy for a really long time, and then you can go back and continue where you left off. He said, I really like that part. I'm planning to leave after some time. I just want to stay and get some nice credits so I can go to the heavenly planets after this life. And he left. You know, and somebody contacted him, and he was still on that page of Bhagavad Gita. Saying, well, I did my, you know, some next life. So that's not taking full advantage of crossing over the ocean material existence to get to the other side. Devahuti has both. She wants not just freedom from the disturbances, but she wants the entanglement of material existence, which she can't shake on her own, to be taken away by one who can take it away. Then she uses another metaphor of an axe in a tree. Devahuti continued, I have taken shelter of your lotus feet because you are the only person of whom to take shelter. You are the axe which can cut the tree of material existence. Of course, he created the material existence. She's already recognized that, acknowledged that. But you're also the axe that can cut the tree. I therefore offer my obeisances unto you, who are the greatest of all transcendentalists, and I inquire from you as to the relationship between man and woman and between spirit and matter. But here we go. Sankhya, the distinction between spirit and matter. The words in Sanskrit is Purusha and Prakriti. And how that's applied is the enjoyer, Purusha, male, and Prakriti, female, is the enjoyer and the enjoyed. In the purport, Prabhupada is saying what you expect him to say. In this world, everyone is thinking, I am Purusha. The woman is thinking, I am the enjoyer, and the man is thinking, I'm the enjoyer. Not thinking the other way. I'm the enjoyed, or I'm the enjoyed. I'm the enjoyer, and I'm the enjoyer. So, such persons are all an illusion. And what is the proper relationship between man and woman? That's what she wants to know. And what's the proper relationship between Purusha and Prakriti, spirit and matter? What's the proper relationship? How should one who is spirit soul address themselves to matter? I want to know that from you. And then she uses this metaphor of axe. A-X. An axe. What's the axe needs the metal piece, but the handle comes from a tree. You take a part of the tree to cut down the tree. And what's that? What's the axe part? That thing that chops the tree. It's knowledge, transcendental knowledge. You're the axe. You have the transcendental knowledge that can chop down the tree of material existence. 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna uses the same metaphor. He speaks of a banyan tree, and one should cut the banyan tree. And what's that axe of cutting the banyan tree from 15th chapter? Detachment and knowledge. Hey, there's symmetry between what Krishna says and what Kapila Dev says. No surprise, it's the same personality, just a different feature of the same personality, explaining things in a slightly different manner. But same principles are being applied. Prabhupada writes, the tree of material existence is explained in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita as an Ashvata tree, whose roots are upwards and whose branches are downwards. It is recommended there that one has to cut the root of this material existence, the existential tree, with the axe of detachment. Detachment. So don't be surprised. Don't be offended. You know, just get with the program when you're hearing all this message about detachment. It's essential. Detachment doesn't mean I don't care. Some people get disturbed by that. That's not what it means. That's the wrong kind of detachment. And giving things up that are to be used in Krishna's service or Krishna's energy, that's another wrong kind of detachment. What's detachment? Krishna's the enjoyer. So it's not attachment to Krishna. It's detachment from matter. Krishna says that in the 5th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What is called renunciation is actually yoga, or linking with the Supreme. Because unless one links with the Supreme, you can't be detached. You can try to give it away or give it a bad name and, you know, make faces at it and things like that. But that's not detachment. That kind of detachment is the flip side of attachment. Real detachment is attachment to the Supreme. So, finding the root of existence and watering the root of existence is one way of saying, and understanding the root of material existence and cutting the root of material existence is the other way of saying. And both are needed. These parallel anukuyasya sankalpa pratikuyasya varjanam. Going for the spiritual and detachment from the material. Both are required. You can't bring your dirty laundry with you into Vaikuntha. Bring your attachments with you into the realm of devotional service. Well, you can try, but it doesn't work. Here's a principle that I understood very, very early as a devotee. Devotional service is powerful. It cleanses. It cleanses in such a way that things that are impediments in devotional service, bhakti removes it. And if you remain attached to something, you'll get removed because that thing is going to get removed by the power of devotional service. So better watch out. It's powerful. Stronger than dirt. It's like an ad, you know. Boom, boom, boom. Stronger than dirt. It will clean dirty things. And if you're attached to some dirty things, you'll get cleansed away too. Down the drain. So, stay with the program of letting go of asat and taking shelter of sat. Engage your senses in pleasing the master of the senses and don't hold on to engaging your senses in the other kind. Sense indulgence. Even in the name of I'll do it in moderation. If that's there and there's some attachment, recognize it. Strive to go beyond it. But don't strive to hold on to it. Strive to go to beyond it. Be prepared gently, gradually, to let go. On the strength of I want the real thing. I want the spiritual position. Like Devahuti. Paragam. I want to receive from the representative of Krishna, Krishna. My relationship with Krishna. I wish that strongly, genuinely, sincerely, consistently. Strive in that direction at least. Prabhupada writes, what is attachment? Question mark. Attachment involves prakriti and purusha. The living entities are trying to lord it over material nature. Since the conditioned soul takes material nature to be the object of his enjoyment, and he takes his position of the enjoyer, he is therefore called Purusha. So, take away this disposition, the spirit that I have of wanting to be the enjoyer. But I want to be happy, so let me find my happiness in service. It's a nice way to pray to Govardhan that some of you may have received or seen at least that nice little calendar looking thing that Bhurijan did of photos in Vrindavan, very nice prayers. So one of those very nice prayers is, oh Govardhan, your happiness is in service. I pray to you that in my heart, this some drop of the desire to please Krishna can enter into my heart and I can simply serve in a humble and inobtrusive way from the background. Something like that. It's the language is nicer, but you pray to one who has the mood of service to, through their mercy and their association, to have such a desire. Exclusively. Devahuti wanted to get out of conditional life and placed herself in full surrender. Sharanya is the term, meaning one who is worthy of taking exclusive shelter, full surrender. You have to know where to place that tendency. Place it properly and place it fully. And the last part of this verse, I'll try to wind up. Whoa, it's 11:25. Sadharma vidam varishtam. Sadharma. Dharma and sadharma. One's own spiritual duty. Your constitutional position of serving Krishna. One who is vidam, one who is enlightened or in knowledge, knows what that is. She knows that Kapila Dev is one who knows that. And that sad dharma is devotional service. Please bless me with devotional service. That which I cannot give up is to serve. And please engage me in sad dharma. Carry me to that. Assist me kindly. Carry me to that position. One last verse. That's Devahuti's prayers, and then Maitreya is explaining this to Vidura, and he says, after hearing his mother's uncontaminated desire for transcendental realization, the Lord thanked her within himself for her questions. And thus, his face smiling, he explained the path of the transcendentalists who are interested in self-realization. So I shared this before, but I like it, so I'll say it again. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary is, his smile is thinking within himself, Devahuti, why are you speaking like this? You can't be like a gross materialist filled with lamentation in the darkest region of ignorance. But you're speaking this way because you want me to say something that's a benefit for conditioned souls. So I'll oblige you and speak in that way for that purpose. So we should hear with that thought. The Supreme Personality of Godhead wanted to deliver us. So he's speaking to Devahuti, something like Krishna speaking to Arjuna, placing Arjuna in Maya, apparent Maya, and speaking, delivering him. Then another nice point is, just see what's pleasing to the Supreme Lord. A nice question. How easy it is to please the Supreme Lord. He's feeling grateful. Oh, you've asked such a nice question. He's also showing by example, as the Supreme Lord does, how whatever it is that we receive, we should also feel gratitude. And when you feel gratitude, what does it feel like? It's elevating. It's whatever the other things are that are going on, you just rise above it. It's a seed of love for that person or those persons from whom you're receiving something for which you're feeling grateful. And then you want to do something in service, because that's our position, not Kapila Dev's position. He's just reciprocating with Devahuti. But devotional service naturally flows when you are feeling gratitude. Such an important thing. Quality. Being able to feel gratitude. And then express it in various ways, such as devotional service. In the purport, Prabhupada summarizes again the same theme. She's interested in two things. She's interested in understanding her spiritual life, her constitutional position, and the other is feeling inconvenience with her material existence, she wants it cut. Not she stops doing things, but the attachment to material existence. Another word or term that's used in the verse is apavarga vardhanam. Apavarga is an important word in the Bhagavatam. It means liberation. Prabhupada translates it in the first canto as ultimate liberation. And vardhanam means expanding. So there's the platform of liberation and there's the platform of expanding liberation. That means devotional service. The personality of Godhead is the deliverer of devotional service, that which expands the platform of liberation. And those who associate with the Supreme Lord in that manner, they're in touch with, just by hearing, just as we're at least attempting to do, hearing and describing about Lord Kapila Deva and his teachings, it puts us in touch with Sat, that which is eternal. And we can then become sadhu, or those who are in touch with Sat, just by the process of hearing. Just have to come and sit. And pay attention. Try. Instead of mind drifting. And then that which is eternally existing awakens within us. And that which is asat, when the light goes on, the darkness is dispelled. Prabhupada writes, anyone who stands on a spiritual platform will exist eternally. Just a couple other points I'll end. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, takes this word apavarga vardhanam and says it has two meanings, the same two. Increasing liberation is the direct meaning, but there's an indirect meaning that's also perfectly appropriate. Cutting out material life or material existence, because to expand into the material, to the spiritual realm, you can't carry your material stuff with you. You have to let go. So cutting. If there's attachment, then cutting. And cutting with knowledge and detachment. Our process is this the path of nivritti. In the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada writes, lengthy purport, the first verse. This is the path of nivritti. And one who's not prepared to let go is not going to progress. So, therefore, Vyasadeva writes, dharma projita kaitavotra. If you're interested in sustaining and expanding material happiness, don't read this book. It's not for you. We're not going to talk about it at all. So just close the book. Don't even waste your time. But if you want to make your connection with Krishna very strong, then be prepared for this nivritti. At least progressively, not instantaneously and artificially and abruptly and fanatically, but be prepared to gradually let go of material existence and accept spiritual existence. That's back to Godhead. So there are these two words. I'll end with this. There's these two words in the verse. Atma Vatam, Atma Vatam, and Satam Gatir. So Satam Gatir, Gati means path, the path to the eternal. The path to the eternal is of interest to devotees. So same theme. Asat grahan, one has to let go of the impermanent, the illusory. Those who are interested in self-realization, so this is again Maitreya speaking to Vidura, so we're hearing. If you want self-realization, be really clear or by the process of hearing, become really clear. What is it? Self-realization. There is an organization that calls themselves the Self-Realization Fellowship. From my little, before I became a devotee, spent a little time looking at that one. It's not clear. It's certainly not who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. It's not at all clear. It's not even mentioned. So how can you understand who you are if you don't understand who God is? Hello? You know, the part having nothing to do with the whole. Hello? The realization is very limited at best. Or just say it stronger. It's illusory. Self-realization needs God-realization. Prabhupada's depiction of this is, if you have a mirror in front of your face and it's dark at night, although the mirror is there, you can't see yourself. But when the sun rises, you can simultaneously see the sun and see your face in the mirror. Similarly, God-realization and self-realization, they occur simultaneously. You can't have one without the other. You can't have God-realization without the self and self-realization without God. So who's going to deliver that? And Paragam, one who can take one to the other side of material existence, can't. So Maitreya, being asked by Vidura, is describing this because Vidura is very eager. Devahuti is very eager. So he's answering just by using that dialogue, Devahuti and Kapila Dev. For our benefit. So if we're desirous, fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. Into that realm of transcendental knowledge that can cut attachment to material existence and release one thereby to enter into the spiritual dimension. Gradually, naturally. Process of devotional service. Okay, so I'm way past my scheduled time. We'll end there. See if there's some discussion. Yes? Up front here? He's got to turn it on. Ah, okay, up front. Raise your hand again.
Thank you, Maharaj. Are you
well? Yeah, we're okay. He'll adjust as you speak.
So you mentioned if you are attached to the thing that is not clear, you will be removed in the process of devotional service. So what does that mean?
What does that mean? It means what it says. There's an implication. The implication is let go. Don't stay attached to the impure. When you're engaged in devotional service, be prepared to let go of things that are impure. Don't consciously, deliberately, hold on to things that are impure. And you know that they're impure. Don't hold on to them. The consequences won't be nice. That's the practical application. What it means is, let go. Or, aspire for that which is pure. And it will come. Because it works. The process is very powerful and pure. Is that all right? Okay. Yes, from this morning. Over here.
In the morning session, you mentioned that Kardamam leaving and going to the forest. Going to the forest shows that he's setting an example of how a householder should not be attached. So, but looking at this last time, can we also understand that in order to give this Sankhya Yoga philosophy to the devotee, it is being orchestrated by God that
Sure, but Devahuti could have asked the same questions even in the presence of her husband, but that's nice. It's a nice understanding also. Sure. Anyone else? Way in the back.
So you said that when there is a right way of understanding what attachment is and wrong way.
Can you speak right into the microphone, please?
You said there is a right way of understanding what detachment is and the wrong way of understanding detachment.
And I gave some examples of wrong ways.
So in Bhagavatam there are some statements which are like very strong, like your signs are white. It's like a tightness, your perspective on the world. Which are like really cutting.
Yeah. And those things apply to materialistic personalities and relationships, not to devotee personalities and relationships. Does that help? Okay. Anyone else? You gotta move quickly. Put your hand up again. Thank you.
So, continuing Nithya Bhagavan's question, Sarvamuni meaning home is an example for the rest ashrama. So, how does it apply? What does it mean to us? How would it apply?
I was hoping someone would ask that question. It should be very clear. But I'll repeat it, what Prabhupada has taught over and over again. There is that we're not a society of three ashrams. We're a society of four ashrams. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. And following Grihastha ashram, when one's duties have been completed in Grihastha ashram, one should move into another ashram. Or, that is to say, in general, the comforts of home, grandchildren, etc. One needs to let go of those things and move into another area where my primary mission is. On the one hand, detachment from that grihastha comfort zone and into the realm of purification by going to places of pilgrimage, taking up activity that is directly for the furtherance of the cause of the message of devotional service. One may do that in the company of one's wife, but without home, children, grandchildren, and all the rest, periodically come back, or the husband can, for some time, leave the company of the wife, go for some time, some month, 2 months, something like that, come back, where the wife is in the care of the elder children, that can, so she's not feeling, it's discussed in the purports, but I'm just giving some embellishment because you asked. And the purposefully, not radically, abruptly, and things like that, move in that direction in one's life. Become more of a, not a person who is just working until I drop, but I, as they say in America, retire. And some means of seeing to the welfare of my wife, some means I look after. So there are different ways of doing that, rather than the detailing different ways, but move in that direction. And it's an option that's commonly not exercised. Just I can say that in the whole of strategic planning, this effort that the global GBC and persons helping us are doing, this is one piece that's been talked about and it never gets acted on. It gets talked about, it gets, you know, what is that? Should there not be some vanaprastha ashram? I was just traveling with one of my god brothers who is entering into the vanaprastha stage and wanted to know, what is it? You know, he knows what Prabhupada's books are. So we discussed there should be a, if not a ministry, at least a committee or a group of people that work on what are examples and teachings and what do you do when you come to that stage? It's kind of a question mark. Take up responsibility in spreading Krishna consciousness. There are some persons in the room who are doing that, and others besides in this room who are doing that, who are in that stage of their life. But either travel to holy places, travel and preach, or take up some responsibility as husband and wife, but just dedication to Krishna-centered activity. Full dedication. The business earning and all the other things that go with grihastha life, wind it down and close it out. Just do that. So that's just a very quick gloss of three different models. Travel, preach, go to places of pilgrimage, do some responsible service. There should be some group of persons working on that so that there's teachings and even, you know, models or examples of persons that can help those that are entering into that phase of their life. What do I do now? It doesn't exist presently, that asset or assistance, support should be. Jananda Prabhu was a grihastha for a long time and wanted to start a vanaprastha ministry. He couldn't find others that wanted to participate, just no traction, so he took sannyas. Now he's Jananda Goswami. And he's happy. So the vanaprastha's kind of got left out. But it should happen. Seriously, it should happen. Oh.
Okay, there's a question online.
Question online. Go ahead.
So the question is, how do we measure spiritual progress?
How do we measure spiritual progress? They have a spiritual progress yardstick, and you just hold it up next to your... Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes about it. And rather than detailing, there are two simple principles. Attachment to Krishna and detachment from matter. So watch where your mind goes. And if the mind is continuing to linger on attachment to matter, that's some indication that spiritual advancement needs a little more attention. And similarly, when there's an opportunity to hear, the mind wants to go. Circumstance may prevent you from going, but if the mind wants to go, you go. You strengthen those activities of hearing and chanting as much as you can, and opportunity presents itself, and you create opportunities. Your mind is considering, how can I use the time that the Lord has given me to increase my hearing and chanting and associating with nice devotees? And to do that, it's a detachment from matter. It's a measure. Those are two very simple barometers. Up front here.
As you mentioned about the...
You got to hold the microphone, right? Okay.
You mentioned about the type of detachment. The wrong type of detachment's example was, I don't
I don't care.
That was one.
Yeah.
Then another is you give up something that can be used in Krishna service.
So in terms of relationships with people,
yes,
physically close relationships, what is the right type of detachment so that we really
service? This is a service that Krishna has given me. And because I care about Krishna, I care about the service that Krishna has given me. That means I care about the person. It's not impersonal, just a service. You're a piece of wood. You're an imperson. I just care about you because you're a service that Krishna has given me. It's a person. So we care about the person because this is a soul, a person, who Krishna has brought in contact with my life. And I care about them. Genuinely. But ultimately, it's all dependent upon Krishna. And I place my faith and trust in Krishna. So everything that I do is a service with that goal in mind. Including the relationships of persons very close to me, who are very dear to me. Yes.
Maharaj, I was reading this cantos, six chapters, where I learned that she had a netted hair and she was a princess, became a mendicant.
Yes.
And then they decided to have a children, so he created flying cities, basically, and took her to
Mendoza
and
Nelson over,
all this. And then, as soon as the Kapila is born.
Not as soon as he's born, when he's mature. To take care of her.
Okay, yeah. When like little after, so when he's matured, it felt that way. That he immediately matured.
Yeah, it didn't happen like that. But go ahead. That's a detail.
So the question was, it felt like that. Bhagavatam says that hundreds year plus they had a honeymoon and all this, and then the Kapila is born. A little time later, he says, "Okay, now he's going to take care of me, and I'm not." It was shocking and surreal, and
he was qualified, that's how. Everything that he did, including marrying Devahuti, was for one purpose. Pleasing the Supreme Lord. He had no other purpose. No other purpose. That's how it's possible. And that particular service was fulfilled, and he moved on to another service, to the Supreme Lord, because that's his purpose.
What is the setting of the story? Does it imply that...
Can you hear him in the back? You got to hold it right close.
The setting of the story, as Prabhu was mentioning, does it imply that in order to have the illuminations that Devahuti had and seek for the shelter, should we have to go through the hardships?
No. She's feeling the way that she's feeling in part. Just as Nandasuta said, her husband just got up and left. Who she's been serving for so long, so naturally there's attachment. He's gone. Now it could happen in other ways. It could happen in an accident, or it could happen in death, or it doesn't have to, but it's going to happen. Whoever we're attached to, it's going to happen. We're just like set up for we get slammed. It's going to happen. So, but it doesn't, to ask such questions can be possible simply from one who's thoughtful, before you get slammed. By hearing. And we can have questions or Brahma Jigyasa, questions into what is Brahman or what is eternal. just by being a little thoughtful. This is all temporary, etc., etc., etc. So what is there that's eternal? Where is their real shelter? And so on. Suffering isn't a necessary prerequisite for asking thoughtful questions. We're ready to go way in the back there? Volume, please. Fix the volume.
I understand the main purpose of Lord Kapiladeva's incarnation is to impart this knowledge of Kapila.
The main purpose of Kapiladeva's teaching is what?
Incarnation is to impart this knowledge of.
Yes, impart knowledge, yes.
So, in general, we see in Srimad Bhagavatam such. Spiritual inquiries or conversations happen between men. And I'm wondering if there is any significance why Mother Devahuti was chosen as the recipient.
Why Devahuti was so?
Was chosen as the recipient.
So what?
Was chosen as the recipient.
Chosen as the recipient.
Yes, he was.
What's special about Devahuti? That to be the mother of Kapiladeva?
To be a woman.
To be a woman.
Generally, it is between men, she said. But in this case,
women are considered of less intelligent class. I'm just wondering that any significance why the Lord had to impart this knowledge to a woman.
Oh, as opposed to someone else. He imparted it to many someone else's. Mentioned. I mentioned it in the morning class. Lord Brahma, Bhriga Muni. Didn't say, to Saraswati or whoever Bhriga Muni's wife is. It mentions the man, but he's imparting it to her. In part, he's called Devahuti Putra Kapila because of the intimacy of that love of Devahuti. Like one of Krishna's names is Yasoda Nandana. So, because of being the mother, her name is chanted. It's like that. So we're not hearing how the conversation between Bhrigu and, imagine that was wonderful. But it's Devahuti, because of her love. Her special devotion for him. And thus, that, to bring honor to, and glorification to her, because of her love. That's the Lord's desire, to glorify His devotees. Like Arjuna. Why Arjuna? Why not? Because of that intimacy of that relationship. And so to this day, we speak of Krishna and Arjuna, or Devahuti and Kapila. Even more, we hear more of Devahuti's name than we hear of Kardamuni's name. The love of the Lord for His devotee. Special love. Someone else. Way up front over here.
My question is from the text 2, where we read that sometimes the devotee acts more powerfully than the Lord. I'm thinking about it, what are the examples available? I could recollect the one where Bhakta Hanuman maybe picked up the mountain, or maybe he flew to the ocean, before there.
Here's another one. One of my favorites is Bhishma Dev relieved Yudhisthira of his lamentation when even Krishna couldn't relieve Yudhisthira of his lamentation. And Vyasadeva couldn't, but Bhishma Dev could. By Krishna's arrangement, he had his devotee do something he couldn't do. I I'd have to stop and think of some other examples, but that's one that comes to mind immediately.
One who wants wealth and other categories.
Yes.
So one of that is one who comes in distress.
Yes.
I'm trying to understand whether how Devahuti's approach to her relief of her so-called ignorance or with an issue she calls it, how is that different or similar to like so-called Sakama Bhakta coming to Krishna?
It's categorically different because it's her humility as opposed to the rest of us. It's not coming from humility, it's coming from selfishness. We want and we don't want suffering. Maybe a mix, but in Devahuti's case it's coming from her humility. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary confirms that. It's just, she's asking that way for our benefit. So she takes the position of one of us.
So, that's the beginning stage. Like, while you're in the process of devotional service, still we may feel the pangs of material existence. In those cases, how do we slowly move towards, let's say, the real prayer kind of thing rather than
cultivation, anushilana. We're here and we have acharyas who are there. So we hear from those acharyas how they pray. We look and hear their teachings and their example, and we look up to them. We laud them and praise them and pray to them and cultivate that, by that association, cultivate their quality. Although we're here. So acharyas, having active relation of service and appreciation and glorification of our great acharyas, is a very important component in, you know, the answer, the response to your question.
Maharaj, this question came from somebody from St. Louis. No loyal or young woman. So she was wondering, is it required to go through the spiritual level like Brahmacharya, Ashram, and, you know, Grahastha Ashram, Vanaprastha Ashram, or Sannyas, or one can skip those levels and go to Sannyas?
For a little girl, I don't know. Okay. There's exceptional cases in our Vaishnava line where one can go directly and skip the in between. However, they're exceptional, with, you know, vastly qualified, exceptional ladies or young girls or young women. And it's possible. But otherwise, other than those very, 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 very rare and especially capable persons, commonly the Vedic culture is a girl, when she's mature, is entrusted to the hand of a qualified husband who can look after her, and then after that period of time she's looked after by her elder children, particularly elder sons, so that the husband can take up this Vanaprastha Sannyas program. Okay, looks like we're done. Any remaining? It's after 12 o'clock. One last question.
What about the couples who don't have sons?
They should have a son. or borrow one? Then their daughter gets married and the son-in-law looks after her. What do you think? Better make sure you have a good son-in-law. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.